LARPbox Crusade presents Transformers Chronicles.
Hello and welcome back to Transformers Chronicles. I'm Delvin, aka the Dark Web. In case you're new to the show, welcome. And let me tell you what this thing is all about. We are going for a wild, crazy ride, chronicling the awesome, wacky, and definitely in this case, corny world of Marvel Comics, the Transformers. But I will never go at it alone. Let's meet my chronicling companions, but we're going to have a little change up going. We'll talk about that in a second. First up, we have the founder of the Long Box Crusade, a relative novice of the Transformers world, the seeker of the Matrix of Knowledge. His name is Pat Sampson. Some call him DJ Christados. How you doing, Pat?
Hey, babe. I'm doing good. Doing good, babe. Since it's the new year, started doing some different recordings. Got my new kind of video camera show that I'm doing, making a movie. It's called Creepazoid. With starring me as a creepit. It's doing pretty good, babe.
I appreciate that you're venturing off into new things. I wish you luck on those.
Thanks.
And don't call me babe. Might blow your camera up. Anyway, we're going to move on to the second person. And this is a guest. We have a guest here. And he's a returning guest. I had to ask him. I was like, guest, because I haven't said the guest name yet, so I don't want to say it yet. I was like, guest, have you been on the show before? And he's like, yeah. I think I was on like back at Transformers 5. And I'm like, what? Because I don't remember like Transformers 5. Like I was young then. I was like, 26, 27 maybe when that show came out. Like I couldn't remember, but he did. And I appreciate it. And he's here again. And he's normally in our basement, sometimes, with a cup of coffee in hand, maybe a fan film or two. His name is Clinton Robeson. He's also part of our Crusaders Club, by the way. I don't know if we'll talk about Crusaders Club enough at the start of the show, but we do have a Crusaders Club for the Long Box Crusade. You could join it at only $1 a month. And Clinton has been a longtime member. And we put out the call and said, hey, we would like for someone to come onto the show. Clinton raised his hand and said, seek me. I am your one. And that's him. We reached out to him. He is on the show now. And I'm now saying welcome to Clinton Robeson. Welcome, Clinton.
Oh my God, you are Delvin the Dark Web. I'm your number one fan. Can I get your autograph?
Yeah, absolutely. You can get it. And just so you know, I don't think it matters or anything, but I live in Charlotte, North Carolina. Like, I don't think that information is going to be pertinent or anything later.
Do you want my autograph, babe?
Who are you?
Jason Albrick. The weasel skull.
Oh yeah, I'll take an autograph for that. Sign it on the bottom of this bank loan.
Just let them sign it. It makes them feel important. Clinton, how are you doing, man?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. Thanks for letting me join in.
Hey, we appreciate you coming on and joining us to talk some more Transformers. I know it's been a minute. You were on for the most iconic Transformers cover perhaps of all time. I just saw a Twitter feed and someone was like, what's the best Transformers cover ever and why is it this? And it showed like Shockwave and that awesome pose and are all dead on it. I was like, I can't even argue, even though some people did argue, but all their arguments were wrong. They just were. So you haven't been on since then, but like we've gone through a lot since then, Clint. We've had Scraplets. Optimus Prime died. Optimus Prime came back. There were some kids that got kidnapped from Earth, and now they're coming back. Like, a whole bunch of stuff has gone on.
You sure? I think you're just pretending.
I see what you did there. And it's true. All of us, in one way or the other, have a hard shell that we put on the outside. But inside, there is like the true us that's dying to come out.
Yeah, that was my goal in life, to be an M&M with a chocolate just there and a hard candy shell.
As long as you don't melt in someone's hand, you're okay. And with all that banter aside, I want to, say hello to John and to Maggie, who are not here this time. They had to step away for this episode, maybe another episode or so. We will miss them a ton. But they asked us to let the show go on. And so we're going to continue to the show in our own style. But just so you know, John, just so you know, Maggie, you're very much missed. And we can't wait to have you back in the very near future. And with that, the purpose of this podcast will be tackling all of Marvel Transformers comics in order, starting with issue 1 and working our way to the series end at issue 80. We'll answer any questions that are brought up to the best of our ability and see how these books we loved then as a kid hold up to our eyes as an adult now. This podcast is guaranteed to be, you guessed it, more than meets the eye. So, Pat, Clinton, let's see what happens when a Decepticon pretender meets Hollywood and Circuit Breaker right after the promo break.
The Transformers will return after these messages.
When you talk about comics, does it sound something like this?
Look. You can't put the Superman number 77s with the 200s. They haven't even discovered red kryptonite yet. And you can't put the number 98s with the 300s. Lori Lamaris hasn't even been introduced.
Or maybe it sounds a little more like this.
You think Mighty Mouse could beat up Superman?
What are you, cracked?
Why not? I saw the other day he was carrying 5 elephants in one hand.
Boy, you don't know nothing. Mighty Mouse is a cartoon. Superman is a real guy. No way a cartoon could beat up a real guy.
Yeah, would be a good fight, though.
Hello, I am the constantly caffeinated Clinton Robinson, and my comics discussions can go to both extremes, but generally fall somewhere in between. On the Coffee and Comics podcast, I will review comic stories and other comics-related topics that can be enjoyed over a cup of coffee. So pour the coffee or other beverage of choice and join me on the Coffee and Comics podcast, available on iTunes and coffeeandcomicspodcast.blogspot.com.
We now return to the Transformers.
Welcome back. The issue we will be covering today is Transformers issue 45, and here is Clinton with the cover description.
All right. Well, I will do my best, and Maggie can make fun of me when she listens, because that's just what she does. Fort Max is still in the cover box doing the head-tearing thing with a sharp yellow-orange background, but the Transformers logo is white-lined with light blue, with More Than Meets the Eye in yellow running along the top of the cover. The main action on the cover is Circuit Breaker. Mm-hmm, it is. Up in the upper center right, firing her patented circuit scrambling blast downward at the Decepticon pretender Skullgrin. Scimitar in his left hand and some sort of gun in his right. Standing at the feet are two humans, one male, one female, pointing up at the firing Circuit Breaker. A mountainous Grand Canyon-like rockscape makes up the background, and there is a blue arrow pointing down at Circuit Breaker that says, not surprisingly, the return of Circuit Breaker.
Thanks for that, Clinton. And I guess we should talk about what we thought about the cover and stuff. Clinton, you have any comments on the cover? What do you think?
I really dig this cover, actually. I'm kind of partial to Circuit Breaker. I'm a little partial to Skullgrin. So, you know, that draws me in already. And it's just kind of a nice action-y cover.
So before we go to Pat, I'm curious, because when I asked you to be on and you said yes, and then I said, it's going to be Transformers 45. It's like, let me see the cover. Shows you the cover. You're like, ooh, I'm super lucky. So like, you seem to have an affinity or an affection for Skullgrin and for Circuit Breaker. So why is that?
Okay. So I actually had the Skullgrin toy when I was a kid.
Oh, and, nice.
You know, major spoilers, the robot is so much more fun than the actual pretender. The pretender shell got beat up by He-Man a lot. That was basically the extent of it. But I actually didn't really know much about Circuit Breaker until you guys started covering the Transformers comic here on the podcast.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you got to her and I was just like, wait, this is a really cool character. Why hasn't she spun off into anything else? So I was really excited to see Circuit Breaker pop up, you know, like, wow, I'm lucky here.
I bet when John listens and hears that comment that you said about Circuit Breaker and the spinoff thing, he might have some things to say about it. But there are 35 more issues of the Transformers to go. And at some point, I think that we're going to talk about why or why not. Did we not see more or less of Circuit Breaker? It's an interesting discussion. I know a little bit about it, but I want to save that nugget. So everybody, listeners, Clinton, you'll have to stay tuned. But for now, we'll go to Pat. And Pat will tell us what he thinks about the cover.
Yeah, I was kind of excited, too, when I saw Circuit Breaker again, because I'm like, ooh, we haven't seen her in several issues when she was collecting heads, right? And then from her beginning, I remember from the beginning with her in GB, BlackRock and all that. So I was like, oh, cool. Circuit Breaker is back again. And I can't remember, because it's been a while, you know, what the whole story was behind that. So I am now intrigued again as to why she didn't have a series or where it all came about. So definitely interested on that. And I think I agree with Clinton as well that, you know, Skullgren on this cover, he's a good kind of character to have here. I think out of some of the other pretenders, I think he's the coolest kind of looking one out of them. You know, with that skull and that grin and just the colors, the purple and the blue. And it looks really, really cool character design, I think. So, and I think they did a really great job of the Grand Canyon kind of background that is here. So you can kind of see some depths that's going on. Really nice coloring done as well.
Yeah, it looks like, cover credits go to Bob Budiansky and Dave Hunt, which we'll be discussing in a little bit. But Bob Budiansky, once again, comes on and does a cover. And every time he does a cover for Transformers, it's good. Like, yeah. He has not drawn a cover where he was just kind of being that selfish guy that's like, okay, I want to be the writer, and I want to be the penciler, and I want to be the inker, colorist, letterer, and I'm going to do the covers. No, like, he just occasionally comes in, does a pinch hit, and you look, and they're good. Like, Circuit Breaker looks menacing. She's high in, like, a, you know, this little combat pose. Like, Skullgrin looks kind of almost like King Kong almost, right?
Yeah.
Like, standing there with humans at his feet, and Skullgrin is like a dynamic look, himself or itself. So there's a lot of good things to be said about the cover. And then you look at the mountainscape or whatever that's going on in the background. Budiansky and Hunt didn't take any shortcuts on this cover. They took time and they made a cover that's pretty good. Now, maybe they did it to spare Jose Delbo a little bit of work, because he had to recover from all of the artwork that he did back in, was it 41 and 42? So maybe that was it. But either way, a quality cover was drawn, and there is nothing to be ashamed of with this cover at all. I think it's very good.
You know what else is really cool is how Circuit Breaker's, you know, kind of her energy that she has coming off her hands kind of goes in to the Transformers logo as well.
Yeah. Yeah, that is a good look, and that's something that a more astute person may have put in the cover description. Truth in advertising, guys. I wrote the cover description. Asked Clinton to read it. But yes, that is a cool effect. I always like when they incorporate the logo into what's going on in the action. It's just that nice little touch that's put in. I like it. That's cool. Well, here on Transformers Chronicles, we rate things on a scale of 1 to 10. So let's do that with the cover, shall we? On a scale of 1 to 10, like the tech specs of old, what would you rate the cover? I see some contemplative looks. Clinton, are you ready? Do you have a number in mind?
7.5, no questions.
No questions.
I will take no questions. Move along.
No questions, just the comment. The comment, Clinton, is that you are not Joe November. So we have to have a solid number, my friend.
Well, I'm gonna play Jared here. I was really leaning heavy into a 7, but you know, both y'all showing so much love for it, especially when Pat pointed out, like, you know, Circuit Breaker's energy and stuff, that bumps it up to an 8 for me.
Okay.
You know, part of that might be some nostalgia factor. You know, like I said, had Skullgrin and all that, but I'm going to go with an 8.
Hey, here on Transformers Chronicles, Clinton, there is nothing wrong with marking out, like, for a Transformer that you have an affectation for. Like, I pretty much mark out every time Optimus Prime is in the book, and he's, like, the character. So you're good there. Pat, what would you rate the cover? 1 to 10.
7. I'll go with the 7, a high 7.
Okay, it sounded like he wanted to give a little bit more reason behind that.
No, it's good. I just, I was there with Clinton, and this is pretty good. And the talk does help me kind of move it a little bit higher, but I think I got to go with my gut on it. It was a 7.
You should go with your gut. Generally speaking, it won't lead you wrong. I'm going to go 7 as well. I think it's good. Like, I could see if someone gave it a little bit of a higher rating, I wouldn't be mad at it. And I just, every time I see Budiansky draw something, like he'll draw a cover, it makes me wonder why in the world didn't he ever like just moonlight as an artist?
Yeah.
Like he was a writer, but if there is a book that he drew like regularly, I don't remember it. So I give Bob credit. I mean, he's got a double threat going on with his pencils and his writing. Like, he's a good writer, very good writer, and he's a very good penciler as well. So thumbs up to Mr. Budiansky and his work that he's contributed on Transformers. And with that, we will turn it over to Pat, who's going to read us the cover credits for this issue.
All right. Well, we are again covering Transformers number 45. Its on sale date was July 28th, 1988. Cover date was October 1988. Cover price is $1. The story is by Bob Budiansky. Pencils go to Jose Delbo. Inks go to Dave Hunt. Colors go to Nelson Yamtov. Letters is Bill Oakley. Editor is Don Daly. And the cover credits go to Bob Budiansky and Dave Hunt. This is all thanks to Mike's Amazing World and TFWiki.net. Back to you, Delvin.
Yes, sir. Let's do the synopsis.
It is a world transformed where things are not what they seem. It is the world of the Transformers.
The Transformers, more than meets the eye. Autobots wage their battle to destroy the evil forces of the Decepticons. Transformers,
robots in disguise.
The Transformers from Marvel Comics.
The title of this issue was The Monster Con from Mars. Mr. Friendly has a problem in need of a solution. His creepazoid monster on his big movie production has shorted out, and his actors, Jake and Carissa, aren't happy about it. Neither are the big money makers of the movie. The solution comes when Friendly's PR guy comes in and shows him a news report of the returning Skylinks bringing back the 4 kids from last issue. Alan, Sam, Jed, and Robin, and Daisy, the teddy bear. Skylinks is accosted by a mob and flies off in a huff, but the answer the PR guy provided makes Transformers universe-related sense. Find one of those robots and put them in a movie. Sure enough, there's an urban legend of a Bigfoot sighting in the Smoky Mountains of North Carolina, and Mr. Friendly, Jake, and Carissa bribe some locals there to find this urban legend, who turns out to be the Decepticon Skullgrin in his pretender shell, sent by Scorponok to establish a steady fuel supply for when they arrive on Earth. So there's a quid pro quo in place. Skullgrin gets his fuel, Mr. Friendly gets his movie, and the actors get to act. The end. Oh, yeah, Circuit Breaker. She was around for the Skylinks thing, and she shows up in North Carolina, too, suspecting Skullgrin might be one of them robots she so openly hates. Skullgrin establishes a friendship with Carissa, and he reveals his internal robot within his pretender shell, and that, of course, is when Circuit Breaker attacks. Carissa's life is put in danger, and Josie, that would be Circuit Breaker, doesn't want to be seen as evil as the robot she puts down, so she asks Skullgrin to save Carissa's life, and then uses the opening to put Skullgrin down for the count. As she was about to strike a killing blow, she gets distracted by Friendly, who only cares about his movies, and for some reason, Circuit Breaker destroys the movie cameras instead of Skullgrin and flies off. The end. No, for real this time. So let's talk about the book. We talk about highs, lows, what the, and a discussion of some sort seems to form. It's happened for about 44 episodes before this. So let's see how it goes this time. Pat, you are up first, sir. Give me a high, low, what the, whatever you feel like talking about with Transformers 45.
Well, this one was kind of different, but yet kind of the same in a way for some of the Transformers issues that we have read. At first, I thought, man, is this a filler? Or, you know, what's kind of going on with this one? But we do have some actually endings to something that's we've been following for a while. So I'm just going to go with a high that'll turn into a what the
okay.
at the end. And it's going to be with the kids. We get to see the kids finally make it home. And they all land safe. They get to be with their parents. You know, Daisy's there too. She made it all the way through. So that's the good thing. And we get to kind of see that end of that story come done. But then we get to see kind of Skylynx and what happens to him when all of a sudden it looked like the crowd was like, oh, hey, we're, you know, let's have some peace or let's, you know, meet and greet this robot here.
Yeah.
And he's talking. And then all of a sudden, next thing you know, they're just at a mob and they're just going after him. I didn't know if that was something maybe Circuit Breaker did to change it or how it just kind of went from, you know, wanting to talk to him and get more information to next thing you know, it's just overwhelming him. And so he has to fly away.
No, I don't think Circuit Breaker had anything to do with it. Like, here's one of those scary points of reality. Like, at any point, if you're on in a group with a bunch of people in it, it doesn't take much to turn that group of people into some sort of crazed mob. All it takes is one or two really determined people to do it. It's kind of scary, but that's what I see what happened at this point. Like, you had one of two people who were probably just, you know, furious and had already made their mind up because there were some signs that, you know, wreck the robots and everything. Someone not knowing when that wreck starts with a W and not an R. And all it took was a little bit of violence shown by that end. And then all of a sudden the mob itself seemed to be the entire crowd as opposed to just those one or two angry people. So I think that's what happened.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah, I wasn't sure as I was reading it, but it kind of made sense that, you know, they were still a little bit kind of afraid of him. I like how Skylynx is like, they're like, hey, can we take a picture? And he's like, well, I really don't have time. My right side's my better side.
it speaks to what John and Maggie have mentioned a lot about Skylynx, how he appears in the cartoon, about how vain he is, right? Like they spoke to a little bit of Skylynx's vanity there, and I appreciated that small little touch.
Why am I under investigation? I'm not a Dinobot.
I also appreciated the touch of the kids having a complete arc.
Yeah,
I didn't remember that. And so it was cool that, like, you know, they went for months for being like kind of stranded out in space to we found out that they were trapped in that space carnival. And then now they've been brought back to Earth safely. So I like that there was an arc of that. That was just a nice little subtle touch. And every step of the way, Bob Budiansky also used that to advance that good old robot action that we really came to see.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Clinton, come join us on a discussion. What do you have? High, low, what the?
I'm going to go with a high. I really like the character arc for Carissa, a.k.a. Ethel Stankiewicz.
What a name, huh?
Yeah, but I mean, like, I honestly didn't see that coming for her to just be like, oh, I'm actually under an assumed name. I'm just this, you know, poor girl from back home, had dreams of being an actress, making a friendship with Skullgren, as you said, doing the King Kong kind of thing. You know, it was just really neat to me. Like, yeah. I said, didn't really see it coming.
What I liked about it is, to me, it made sense. Like, there was a good tie-in. First of all, Scorponok's like, you know, we're Decepticons. We need fuel. Find a way to get us fuel. I will add, because I'm going to talk a little bit about it in Transformers Spotlight, the function, Skullgren's function, is a siege warrior. So, I mean, how do warriors take care of things? You know, by destroying stuff, by doing warrior-ish, you know, because you're warriors. Like, you're not necessarily a peace broker. Like, he could have done what a lot of Decepticons did and, like, just start destroying stuff, and he didn't. Instead,
went out and got a job.
Yeah.
He went out and got a job. And the funny thing is, not many people really would have minded that relationship in itself. Like, he's like, okay, I work, do these cheesy movies, and I get fuel, and I send it back. Everybody's kind of happy.
And he has fun doing it.
Eddie had fun doing it, and he gets his pretender shell, you know, waxed and treated, and his nails filed and everything. Like, it could have been a worse arrangement, is all I'm saying. And so what I appreciated about that is it sort of added a layer to the Decepticons. Like the Decepticons only, like, yes, they are fuel brokers. Let's just say that. Like, and they want to have fuel in order to continue, but like they don't necessarily have to be, okay, we're gonna murder everyone in our sight. And heck, Skullgren found a way to do it that seemed to be okay with the humans, and it was okay with his boss. I give him credit for that, and I give Carissa credit for being who she was too.
Do you think that the boss knew, though? Or do you think he was just like, hey, I'm putting this stuff aside for when he actually comes and go, hey, I got you your fuel. Here it is. Because I don't know if he has communication or not with them.
I wasn't sure. You mean, so let me rephrase that question. You're saying like the director of the movie. Do you think the director of the movie knew that Skullgren was taking that fuel and bringing it back? Is that what you're asking?
No, who was the Decepticon that told him to get
Skullgren?
No,
Scorponok.
Scorponok, yeah. The Scorponok told him to go get the fuel.
I think he didn't care. Like, if you're a leader, right, and you trust your folks, and so if I told you, like, Pat, I need you to go in town and get me these groceries.
Okay. I come back with groceries, and you're like, hey.
I come back with the groceries. I'm like, okay. I might ask if I have scruples. I might ask, did you steal these? And you're like, no, I didn't steal it. Okay. Like, no, no one's gonna come after you and me, right? No. Mm-hmm. Well, okay. Well, I trust you. You've done good work for me before. We're good. Okay. I wouldn't worry too much about it. And so maybe that was just one of the situations where Scorponok was like, you know, I don't think as a Decepticon he would have cared, you know, like, did you rape and pillage and plunder? No, I just went on this movie set and they gave me oil. Okay. if you got the job done, man, yeah, I can't get mad at you about how you did it. So that's what I think. I think it was an overall arrangement of convenience. Pat, since you're off mute, do you have any other comments to add?
And I liked the character development, and Clinton was kind of saying that with the actress who was in here. You know, she tried to be nice to Jake, the other actor, who just seems to be like he's all that in a bag of chips, but and he's not. And she continued to kind of really be nice, like she's that, you know, hey, let's be friends and let's work together to grow our careers. And so it wasn't happening with him, but it was definitely happening with Skullgren. And just the interactions between her and Skullgren did have that kind of King Kong-y kind of a vibe to it that I thought was really, really neat. And you mentioned it, that layer of a Decepticon. I was like, wait a minute, is he a Decepticon? Why is he just being all nice? You know, I was very shocked by that. And I'm like, okay, this is kind of cool. You get to see, you know, he didn't really have to, you know, try to pretend really to be anybody else. He just needed to do the job. Okay. He made it easy. Got the contract and let's do it. And, you know, he's getting pampered.
Yeah. I think personally as a warrior, like you see, this man has probably seen millennia of fighting. You got an opportunity to do your job and you don't have to fight all the time. You probably would take it. That's my assumption. I haven't fought for millennia though. Clinton, have you fought for millennia?
Millennia? I didn't even know I was supposed to be fighting for her.
So, okay, great. So Clinton hasn't fought either. So like, yeah, if he has an opportunity to do something peacefully, then he would, I'm assuming. I think we all would. Yeah, so I think if you think about it, this isn't the first time the Decepticons have tried to pull a scheme that wasn't violent per se. Like Brat Bat pulled the car wash of doom. And really,
that's true.
That was just a siphon effort of gas. Like everybody was just coming and dumping gas into like his big container so he could take it and turn it into energon cubes. Like that wasn't the most nefarious plot. And in fact, it was a lot better than Megatron's, or I should say a lot less bloodshed than Megatron's. Okay, I'm just going to blast everything with my fusion cannon and you're just going to give me what I want. So there is that. Clinton, one of the things that you mentioned is that you have an affectation for Circuit Breaker. She certainly had a part in this, right?
Oh, yeah. See, it's been so long since she showed up. I had forgotten that, you know, she is wheelchair bound except for when she's in her gear, which, I mean, let's Marvel Universe this for a minute. This goes right alongside the Peter Parker web shooters and everything else. If you can build a suit that makes people able to move again from being paralyzed, why are you not out there marketing this instead of killing Transformers?
Because they did them wrong. They did her wrong.
Yeah, you see, Clinton, she really hates Transformers. It's kind of her thing.
I'm just saying she can multitask.
Look, I agree with you on a common sense level. But I will say this. And as I mentioned, we got 35 issues of Transformers to go, 35 episodes of Transformers Chronicles to go. And over the course of those 35 issues, we're not done with Circuit Breaker yet. I'll say that.
Okay. I was wondering that. I was going to ask that. Will we see her again? I know the last time we saw her, we're like, oh, you'll see her again.
Yep.
But I didn't know if this was the last time. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I think we'll see her in the next issue, maybe. Or did she just fly away?
Looks like she just flew away. And I'll be honest with you, like, I don't remember much about issue 46. I've read it before, probably multiple times, but it's been a minute. So I don't remember much about 46. So it's going to be a surprise to me. I don't know if she's back next issue, but I can promise you Circuit Breaker will be back. She will be. And so what I was going to say about that, though, is the one thing that they kept consistent about Josie Bella Circuit Breaker is that she really hated her some robots. she was not a fan of them robots, man. And so, like, it kind of just became, I mean, you could see it here. It's her passion. Like, I'm assuming, like, wherever they were in North Carolina when she befriended Ethel or Carissa. And Carissa just kind of said, you know, like thinking that she was just saying something to a fan who may have just been in the area. We're going to be doing the shoot over in the Grand Canyon. You won't be able to be there, but that's where Skullgren's going to be next. Just so you know. And what did Josie Bella do? She followed them out there to from North Carolina all the way to the freaking Grand Canyon to figure out whether or not this thing that she suspected to be a robot was a robot. So that is an all-consuming kind of hatred. I don't know. Maybe she sold some wares along the way or something, but her main character arc is Circuit Breaker, don't like robots.
See, how does she... Why can't she just be in her uniform all the time?
I don't know. I would say that's probably just a stylistic choice. Like, let's just take... We talked about Spider-Man. Spider-Man's not in costume all the time. If anything, when you see Spider-Man in costume all the time, that's kind of like a big glaring sign that things are going bad in Peter Parker's real life, right? Mm-hmm. So I would say if Josie Bella is in her Circuit Breaker getup all the time, that maybe she has fallen too much into the obsession that she has of killing robots.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense?
It does, but because she can just, if that gives her power to walk around and do, you know, kind of have that normalcy again,
yeah,
that was taken away from her, why wouldn't she do that? Unless she's using that more as a disguise to get where she needs to get into.
And it looks like that's what she's kind of done, you know?
Yeah, just to kind of lay low and not, interesting. Yeah.
Well, let's see. I wanted to add something. It's something that Jared mentions a lot of times when it comes to movies and stuff. Like, it's interesting. Like, if you take all the characters in the book and, you know, we'll talk about, you know, who had the touch and who was out of touch and all that stuff later. But there weren't a lot of good guys in this book. Like, you had a Skylynx appearance. Very quickly, Skylynx left. And then there was Circuit Breaker who, if you want to be mean about it, you could say she's one note. She's not. She has an origin. She has a reason for her hatred of robots. But if you're mean about it, you could say she's one note. You had that male actor who was a jerk. You had the director of the movie. He was a jerk, too. There weren't many good guys in this issue to root for. Like, it was interesting because one of the quote-unquote good guys kind of wound up being Skullgren. Not over the top, but kind of, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But, I mean, because he made a friend. And he felt betrayed by that friend, and he didn't try and go after her and hurt her. He was kind of like, well, you betrayed me, so I don't care if you live or die. And then he realized that he made a mistake and came back and fixed his mistake. So Skullgren at least had an arc there, and I give him credit for that. Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely agree. I definitely agree on that one. Yeah. I think there are some hard choices here when we do get to who had the touch as well, too, for something. So there's some good character developments and focuses on this issue.
I think so. And I don't know if we've had a one-off like this, like basically featuring one Transformer since that Megatron issue back in the teens. You remember that one?
Oh, Megatron, where he was the gun.
Yeah, he lost his lost his memory. And I kind of like that, too. It just kind of gives you that focus on that one robot, and it kind of it becomes a Transformer spotlight in a sense, where you're just talking about one character and you get to learn a little bit more about that character. Clinton, where you at, man? You got anything to add to this?
I do kind of want to point out that this story's plot is slightly similar to a season two episode called Hoist Goes Hollywood.
Keep going.
I mean, basically, just if I'm remembering the episode correctly, I haven't watched it in, 20-something years. But they end up involving the Autobots in making a movie. And it's, it's played for laughs more because, like, they do the whole, stop evil monster, zap, zap. And they're like, well, his gun didn't fire. Well, we draw that on later. You need to fall down. Oh.
I don't remember that. Like, man, it's like, man, one of these days I'm gonna have to go back and watch the Transformers. Of all things, like, do they have Transformers on any streaming platform right now? Do you know?
Yeah, it's on Tubi.
Mm-hmm. It's on Tubi.
Yep.
Yeah.
I might have to just sit there and start from season one and go through it because I know there. I mean, there's a reason why I love these things so much. I mean, because I saw the comics. I read the comics, but I also watched the cartoon. So I wish I would have been able to make that parallel myself. That's cool. Well, I don't know if there's a ton more to talk about in the book. Did I miss anything? Pat, do you have any notes?
No, this was somewhat of a quick read, somewhat of a, like you said, a good one-off-y, but it also completed some things and moved the story forward a little bit too with Skullgren and getting the Energon. So obviously, what's he doing with this Energon? Are they coming to get it? When are they coming to get it? What's going on there? And now, where did Circuit Breaker go? She just left him after she kind of defeated him, or at least kind of stunned him, and then decided, I'm out of here. I'm not going to be, get the spotlight put on me because that's not what I'm doing here. I'm a hater, but I'm not a hater of anything else. I'm a hater of robots.
Yeah, and like, I was a little bit iffy on that ending.
Like, yeah, I was like, is there more? What's going on?
I think that she would have continued to try. I think she would have tried to take out the camera and then gone right back to trying to take out Skullgren permanently, and that didn't happen. And I'll add another question because. Well, partially for comedic effect, but also partly because it was an old story. Remember, she used to work for Rat, round and round.
Yeah, yep.
But, I don't know if she works for Rat anymore, whether that whole thing has been shut down or not, but because it seemed like she was kind of doing this on her own, but I don't know whether she was doing that and still working for Walter Barnett and company or not at this point. Because Bob didn't mention that, so I don't know whether or not that was the case or not. So I agree with you as far as the table setters, though, and that's a sign of good writing. He closed a couple of loops. Like, one of the biggest loops was that all the kids and Daisy got back to their respective homes. And that also means that Skylynx came back to Earth, which also means that presumably somewhere around Earth now, the Optimus Prime and his folks, because they have to be getting closer because they were all on the moon at some point. And then now on the Decepticon side, the Decepticons, if you remember from issue 41, they had a very successful raid on the Ark because Grimlock made the mistake of leaving no one behind to guard the Ark in the middle of his brawl that he was having with Blaster. Decepticons came in, raided. They took some Decepticons from that ship. All of the Decepticons that Omega Supreme had got killed or knocked out of commission way back in like issue 19, took all of those back. So presumably speaking, maybe Scorponok and company are going to take those and fix up the robots that were out of commission, maybe?
Well, makes sense why they're getting the energy again.
Makes sense. Maybe. I think we're going to see. So it seems like it's one of those deceptive ones where you look at it and you see kind of a maybe silly offshoot of Skullgren kind of playing a King Kong role, but they introduce Circuit Breaker back, let us know that she's still around, and the Decepticons are still on the mission to do something. We just don't know what yet. Same thing with the Autobots. Clinton, do you have anything else to add before I move us on?
No, I think I'm good.
Clinton's good, Pat's good, and in that case... Now's the time for us to talk about Who Had the Touch, where we talk about which character in the book stood out the most, be it Autobot, Decepticon, or human. Pat, if you want to tell us who had the touch, I would love to hear it.
Yeah, as I was kind of saying before, it was kind of a struggle for me in with these, with figuring out who had the touch. But I'm ending up with going with Circuit Breaker Josie. I think she had the touch, and she had some defining moments in here where she changed of heart. You know, she didn't want to see the actress get hurt, so then she has to work, or at least ask the person or thing that she hates to help out here, right?
Yeah.
And then from that, I think she may have, maybe she had a little change of heart that she's like, okay, I don't want to be like them, or at least be put in that light that I'm just out here to hurt everybody. So I'm going to blow up the camera and then I'm going to fly away and just get out of here for a while and maybe go think about some stuff.
Good call, Pat.
Okay, Clinton agrees with Pat, but I don't know whether or not Circuit Breaker is his choice for the touch.
No, I mean, I like Circuit Breaker. I like where her story's going, but I think I got to go with Carissa for the touch.
Yeah, another good choice.
You know, she definitely made friends with Skullgren, didn't have a problem with him being this 20-foot-tall monster. Yeah, it was just another actor to her, so...
And hey, I tell you what, I appreciate people not making fun of you for being tall and big. You know, it's not easy. I just want to let you guys know that. And I appreciate anyone who befriends me and doesn't treat me like a 20-foot tall monster either. For the touch, I'm going to go with Skullgren. I liked his character arc in the book. He had a mission. He was kind of bumbling about that mission, or maybe there was something in North Carolina, Smoky Mountains, that he was sort of trying to figure out, ascertain, or maybe that's just where he was holed up trying to figure out how he was going to execute his plan, whatever plan that was. But then all of a sudden the plan found him, and what did he do? He adapted and he went with it. And so I give him credit for that. Like, cause there was a point where had the book ended, it was kind of one of those that you'd have the hugest question mark. Like, wait a minute, Decepticons are getting along with humans and the humans are giving them oil. And what's going on? That's not right. They're Decepticons. They're the bad guys. But at the same time, it's like the man's working. And instead of cash, he asked for oil and they gave him oil. So is there anything wrong with that? That seems about as transactional as you or me going to work and getting our money and us using our money for whatever the heck we use it for. So, and then he showed a little bit of a depth too, because he had a friendship with Carissa, which was cool. And the only times that he lashed out really were when he felt like he was being misunderstood or when he felt like he was being betrayed.
Mm-hmm.
All I'm saying is, yes, Seth Goldgren belongs on the side of the evil Decepticons, but like that evil had at least a few layers to it, and I appreciated that.
But I am just a broken machine, and I do things that don't really mean
And with that, if we talked about who had the touch, someone had to be out of touch. We talk about the character that was the worst in the book and should have their movie constantly interrupted, whether by malfunctioning creepazoid or corporate greed, in the segment called Less Than Meets the Eye. Clinton. Who to you was less than meets the eye?
Oh, the director, absolutely. That dude was willing to put anyone and everyone in literal mortal danger just to make a movie. I mean, he was just like, get out there and die on screen. It'll be the best acting you've ever done, and we'll make millions. Well, I'll make millions. You'll be dead, but that's okay.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you on that, to where especially his arc was completely revealed when he told Circuit Breaker's like, kill him. I don't care. He's under contract. Kill him. And yeah. I'll give you more money than I gave him. And it's like, what, dude? You're a jerk. Like, you know, no one's going to want to work for you if you continue to do them like that. But yeah, I agree with you. I think Mr. Friendly was, yes. maybe this was Bob Budiansky's indictment on Hollywood. You know, like, it's interesting. Pat, are you in agreement? Is it the director or do you have someone else?
Yeah, I had the director as well, too, with a side note of that Jake, the actor, who was just a, you know, just an all-around dweeb. You know, just he was just all about himself and all that. And he, as many times and things that were going on, not listening to Clarissa or just, you know, especially when she was explaining it all to him. She just wasn't listening.
I got what you did there.
I just thought about that one too, and it came to my mind.
I mean, I'll even excuse that it's Carissa and not Clarissa. You know, you're so happy to make that joke that I don't want to rain on your
parade. Oh yeah, you know. Either way, it's a good one. But yeah, that Jake guy, just that Jake actor guy. You know, just I didn't like him. He's just. I was hoping he was going to change, and he kind of looked like he was going to, especially when they got really in danger at the end. And then after that, then it's just like, oh, no, come here. We're still acting. And she's like, what?
Yeah, it's in a sense, he was kind of being at that moment. He was kind of at least being the like actor doing what his director told him to do. It was like, all right, I'm going to come in here and just figure something out. To do that improv while there's literal life and death circumstances around you is at least decent acting. But no, overall, I agree. He was a jerk. He kept talking down to Carissa. I did not like that. There wasn't a need for him to do it. And yeah, was not a huge fan. That's it, folks. We talked about the touch. We talked about who didn't have the touch. We talked about the book. We have not rated it, though. So from 1 to 10... just like the text specs of, oh, what are we going to rate Transformers 45? I don't think I've gone first yet, so I will be the first one to go first. 7. I will put it at a 7. It's a little bit better than filler. It's definitely a little bit better than average. And I always marvel in this ongoing reread that we're doing of Transformers Chronicles, how well Bob Budiansky mixed in the human element with the wacky robot element. And as John has mentioned a few times, like, oh, and as we well know now from any of these toy properties that happened in the 80s to today, like you have your ideas for stories and stuff. A lot of times you have brand managers basically saying, yes, you can do this or no, you can't do this. And at the time, since the Transformers were such a hot property, they're basically saying, write about this toy, write about that toy. We don't care if it's good, just write about it. But you could tell Bob did care. And Bob wanted to make sure that his craft was not tarnished by writing these toy books. And I always marvel at just the quality of work that he put in, particularly in an issue like this. Like it was, I won't say it was a contrived plot because it was like King Kong, but it was nothing like King Kong as well. It took its own little nice spin on it and became a good story of its own. So I give it a 7. Pat, what do you think?
Yeah, I think just like you, it was kind of a filler. It was better, a little bit better than that. And I think because of the character development, the different plot endings, the other plot threads that are there now and that we're interested in finding out, I'm at an 8. I thought this was really good. I want to know a little, even though it's an end, I don't think it's the end because there's definitely a lot more that it was setting up again. Because now what is Skulker going to do? Is he, you know, is he going back to the Decepticons? What's going to happen now that he ain't going to make any more money or more oil or whatever?
Maybe he has a sitcom, you know, coming out like, you know, Who's the Skullgrin or something like that. you never know. Clinton, what would you rate the book?
Oh, man, this story was great to me. It had pretty much everything you want from a random Transformers issue, except for, you know, tons of Transformers. But I mean, it had a solid plot. It had complete story arcs for our, you know, little one and done people. Everybody was easily characterized, and you even had a little moral at the end, basically. I'm going to go with the 7. It feels like it could have been an episode of the cartoon, and I would have enjoyed it as a kid. I enjoyed it as a 40-something, so yeah, 7.
Fantastic. We got a couple 7s. We got an 8, and I think that's right where this book belongs. It was a good book. It was a good read, and we got one more issue of kind of offbeat before we go back to a very major storyline. I'm mm-hmm. looking forward to reading that very major storyline too. But we got one more kind of weird offbeat issue, but let's see what it brings when we get to it. But let's not get too ahead of ourselves. We can and will never leave you without John's segment of the show called Transformer Spotlight, where he discusses a particular Transformer that was featured in today's issue. And we're doing it even though John isn't here. We're going to talk about Skullgrin, y'all. The function of Skullgrin was a siege warrior. When you encounter Skullgrin, just who you're meeting depends largely on what he happens to be wearing at the time. The Cybertronian robot at his core is intelligent, logical, cold-blooded, and vain. He tends to put his own interests above the Decepticon cause and is easily distracted from missions and even direct combat should something of interest catch his eye. He finds Earth in particular quite interesting and is eager, in a decadent and mercenary way, to learn what it has to offer him. Should you meet Skullgrin in his pretender shell, however, you'll find yourself facing a whole different beast. When he's encased in his monstrous hide, a new personality takes over. He becomes a snorting, snarling, sinister sicko. Low on brains but brimming over with boundless, unstoppable rage. This Skullgrin is the kind of warrior you just point in a certain direction and let fly. Mindless destruction is his favorite pastime, and he won't stop snarling and fighting until everything before him has fallen. The disconnect between these two personas can lead to some rather erratic behavior on his part. The two disparate personalities attempting to reconcile themselves within him can make who and what Skullgrin is like on any given day a toss-up, and should the coin come down wrong, a potentially deadly one for anyone nearby. Skullgrin's inner robot turns into a Cybertronic assault tank with two built-in cannons in addition to Skullgrin's own guns that can be attached to the sides. The tank has three wheels on the underside to allow him to roll. The built-in cannons can be swung out of his arms easily in this mode, while his side guns can be either attached to his knees or held in his fist. The guns themselves can be combined into a single double slag maker laser, though the large size means it suits his pretender shell better. Skullgrin's pretender shell is a humanoid monster with a demonic ram skull. That sounds very metal, by the way. The top of the skull is molded in softer, rubberized plastic like most shell accessories. The lower jaw of the skull is molded into the chest of the shell itself and even includes a tongue. Because the lower jaw is unpainted, it almost becomes invisible, giving Skullgrin the appearance of having no lower jaw at all. Unusually, his belt actually works like a belt, looping around the shell and fastening together. While this may be more realistic or may look better, it also means one needs to unfasten the belt every time one opens the shell. The shell is armed with the vibro sword and the double gun. As a side note, Skullgrin was sold in Japan as Dauros, D-A-U-R-O-S. Bob Budiansky originally wrote Skullgrin's profile sometime in 1987, well before giving the character the spotlight in issue 45 that we covered here on Transformers Chronicles. And in the comic books, it came out in mid-1988. For whatever reason, Skullgrin's depiction in this story didn't really match up with the profile. His bio described him as having a split personality, rational while in robot mode, but a feral beast while inside a shell, yet he spent nearly the whole comic inside a shell and was perfectly coherent throughout. When the profile was finally printed years later in 1990's issue 72, it's obvious from the reading it was amended after the fact to insert an explanation for Skullgrin's behavior in the earlier issue, blaming his, quote, two disparate personalities trying to interface on the same level, unquote, for his uncharacteristic behavior. His strength is an 8, intelligence a 9, speed 4, endurance 7, rank 7, courage 4, firepower 8, and skill was a 6. Big, big shout out to tfsource.com, tfu.info, and tfwiki.net, which I directly cribbed all of this information from. And if you ever want to go to any of those, they're awesome to find out information about the Transformers. And with that, we go to a promo break.
The Transformers will return after these messages.
The swamp, more than merely a place. It is a churning, seething, bubbling bed of life of which you are a part. Once you were a man, a chemist named Ted Salas, until one little experiment went somewhat awry. And you changed. The serum that was to have made you a super soldier combined with the strange forces in the swamp to make you over into this, a shambling, mindless mockery of your former humanity. The macabre Man-Thing.
Man-Thing was created in the early 1970s to capitalize on the growing monster craze, but under writer Steve Gerber, it became something quite different. Experimental, surreal, and very, very weird. It was something I loved as a kid, but does it still hold up today, 4 decades after its initial publication? So join me, Paul Matthew Carr, as I attempt to make sense of this cult classic and analyze each issue, putting it in the context of the time it was written and comparing it to the standards of today. And maybe you, too, can come to love the world's second most famous swamp-based comic book character as much as I do. The Nexus of All Realities, a Man-Thing podcast, a twice-monthly dive into the bizarre.
We now return to the Transformers.
Now is the time for transmissions where we heap praise upon the audience for listening to us. Thank you very much. We are going to be talking about Transformers Chronicles episode 42, where we discuss Transformers issue 42. And a very sincere thank you to those who either retweeted or shared. Did I say that right? Retweeted and shared, Pat?
Yes.
A very sincere thank you to those who retweeted and shared Transformers Chronicles, and I'm going to read those names very quickly. Fan Film Fridays Podcast, that'd be Clinton. Thank you, sir. Warlock Thanos Podcast, Ed Moore. Comic Foil, Coffee and Comics, that's also Clinton. Serpy Matt, that's Matt Passo. Lorenzo Sleestack, Scotty Cameron, Jim Neal, and Scott Andrew Hutchins. Thank you all. And we will now go back and forth talking about some of the comments that we got from social media. I'll start. Scotty Cameron says, the one and only Optimus Prime has returned. Huzzah. Absolutely. Still very happy about that. Pat, you want to read the next comment?
Sure. The next one comes from Gene Hendricks. And Gene says, drawing even more ire from John. Yes, I had the Power Master Optimus Prime. Oh, Gene. What a lucky kid Gene was. He had all the toys.
Yeah, that's the kid that you didn't like, right? And had all
the toys. But you would want to go and play with him because he had all the toys.
So. Always. And then you play with him, and then you come back and say, I don't like him. Yeah.
but we like you, Gene. We like you, Gene.
We like you just fine, Gene, sincerely. Clinton, you want to read the next comment, please?
Yeah, John M. Wilson says, in reply to Gene Hendricks, I had Power Master Prime. I lost him at some point and rebought the Takara version, God Ginrai, with the second trailer, God Boomer, or God Bomber. that becomes armor. Good Lord, John, I kind of want to go over to your house and play with that version, because I just had the American version Power Master.
Yeah, I don't know what he's talking about. So, yeah, John, when you hear this, you're going to have to at least take a picture of this and show us if you still have the toy. I mean, which would be really awesome if you did. I'll read the next comment. Derek William Crabb says, irony, calling Goldbug out for calling Nebulons humans while calling Goldbug Bumblebee. No one likes to show off, Derek. No one likes to show off, sir.
Hey, nobody likes dead naming either.
The next one we have is Samuel Caracillo. I could be butchering that name, but, and he says Super Jinrai, which we believe is the Power Master's name for Optimus Prime.
Yeah, all of you guys that are coming in here that are showing more knowledge than the hosts of the show, actually, thank you, sincerely. Like, the same thing happens to me on New Warriors, which I have a love and affectation for New Warriors, and me and Jared are talking in the comments, and there are people who are dropping knowledge about the show that just gives me more of a love and appreciation for it. So, like, I appreciate it. I don't think I've ever heard it called Super Jinrai before. So, that's cool.
I would have to say I definitely agree with you, because I've learned a lot, not only from John and you and guests that we have had on, but also reading in the comments and just getting the feedback that we're getting from everybody else and learning, you know, from them. So, it's a great community we have building here.
Yep, absolutely. Clinton, next comment, please.
Okay, well, Peter Pelletier says, great timing dropping the episode the same day the new Transformers number one debuted from Skybound. That's a good point, Peter. I'm impressed. You know, you could say Delvin had it all planned, but...
I think Peter sent me a message about that, and I said, man, I wish that I were that good and that we planned it that way, but we didn't. It was a complete accident. On last episode, we talked a little bit about that new series that came out, and it's been very good. I've only read one and two. Did I read three? Yeah, no, I don't think so. So I need to go ahead and read three, and I think maybe four might be out by the time that this airs. I want to read it and keep up on it. It has been very good. I also want to reach out to the creator of that series and have him on a show coming up. And so if anyone has a connection to him, I would appreciate it. Or I will just reach out to him cold and just ask. Because, I mean, the worst he can say is no. Next comment is by Herbert Fung, who we're always impressed by. And yes, by the way, he has a picture of Power Master Optimus Prime in the pose from the book. And it's awesome. But he also had a comment. That comment is, Power Master Optimus Prime was my first Optimus I bought at the time. Still remember it. I bought it during a field trip to Granville Island. From there, I found the mail-in catalog that did have the original Optimus Prime for a modest sum, plus the robot points tags that you get on the packaging of Transformers. I was so excited to get the original, I completely forgot to clip and send the robot points in with the payment. They still sent it to me, but it only came in a plain corrugated cardboard box. The contents were the same, i.e. styrofoam insert, figure, and accessories. In the early 2000s, Takara reissued their version of Power Master Optimus Prime, which had a die-cast cab with translucent windows and retractable fist on the combined mode. At the time, I couldn't justify buying the reissue without selling my original, so that's what I did. I regret that now, but it was more practical decision at the time. So here's my cover homage using the Takara reissue, but also my original Optimus Prime cab to give it that flat chest look the comic used. I'll use that excuse that the Optimus Prime Power Master is the most important bot here, but the truth is I never brought any of the other Power Masters. It's okay, Herbert. We forgive you. And seriously, every time I see your comment and see that you posted one of these pictures, I'm absolutely delighted. The kid inside of me beams with joy. So thank you for your comments all the time. Really, really appreciate them. Pat, you want to read the next one?
Sure.
Yep. Okay.
Next one comes from John Powers, and he says, I have this issue, Optimus Prime's full return to the series as Power Master Optimus Prime with his partner, Hi-Q. I believe it was the other Autobot Power Master's first appearances and their partners. I know Dreadwing and Darkwing also made their first appearance as well as their partner. Missing from the entire series, though, was Double Dealer and his partners, Knock and Scar.
Yep.
They got two minor appearances in the UK series, though with the second appearance being what would be his curse in the Transformers comic lore. He takes on and tries to kill Hot Rod, Rodimus Prime, only for the opposite to happen.
Oh, so Rodimus Prime actually does kill somebody? I'm surprised.
Maybe.
Useful. and it looks like there was a little back and forth where Samuel or Carasquillo, apologies if we are butchering your name, Sam, that mentioned the names of the toys from John's comments, said Hydra and Buster, Double Clowder, and Super Genrai. So I'm assuming that those are the Japanese names for both Dreadwing and Darkwing, and Double Dealer and Power Master Optimus Prime, Super Genrai. That would be my guesses. John Powers replied that we didn't get those in the States, though they were from Japan's Master Force line. I mean, Super Genrai to us was Power Master Optimus Prime with high Q. The Apex armor parts were completely missing from the USA toy. And Clinton, you want to read one more comment, please?
David Linton says, the rules for toys commercials had a limit of how much animation they could use for TV spots intended to shield kids. Hasbro got around this rule with Transformers and G.I. Joe by making a commercial for comic books.
Interesting. That's funny. I did not know that. That's crazy. But it makes sense, though. It makes sense. Like, got to find a way to show those products out. And hey, you know, we're still covering today. So it's not like they were just shallow. So by the way, John left the note for us and says they weren't allowed to show commercials for toys featured on the show they were currently airing. So you couldn't have an ad for Transformers toys while the cartoon was on. But the comic was technically not a toy. So they would air ads for the comics complete with cartoon intros for both G.I. Joe and Transformers. This was eventually nipped in the bud. Maggie and John talk about advertising in cartoons quite a bit on our Married Watching Cartoon show. They go into it in depth in the Smurfs episode. So if you're ever curious about their thoughts of it, go to Married Watching Cartoons podcast and check it out. We also want to pay attention to Spotify as well, where we have a good following. Scotty Cameron is always awesome and drops a comment on that. Two says, great episode. It's great to have Optimus Prime back. Conveniently arrives following the start of Skybound's Transformers run. So, yeah, thank you to the listeners from Spotify. We really, really appreciate it. Tell your friends, please. And if we happen to miss a few, we apologize. It's a good problem to have, but we don't want anyone thinking that we forgot them. I know it's a cool thing hearing your name read on a podcast. So ping us on Twitter X, Facebook, Instagram, or YouTube, and we'll correct it in the next issue.
Hey, this is Delvin, a.k.a. The Dark Web. Why the heck am I calling my own podcast network's voicemail? Well, I want to talk about Transformers 45, and why do I want to talk about Transformers 45? Well, I forgot to mention in the issue that we covered, which was Transformers issue 45, I was in the book. My name was in the book way back in the day because I entered this contest about Spot the Shingo. You had to figure out where the name Shingo was written in Transformers 41. And I wrote in and I incorrectly guessed where it was, but my name was featured from the state of Alabama as being a person who wrote in. And I thought that was pretty dang cool. So if you have the original issue, you can check it out and you can see young Delvin Williams' name sitting right there in the book. Hope you have a good day.
And that is the show. Please come back and join us for the next episode where we discuss Transformers issue 46, where we see the Sparkabots do Sparkabot things. If you'd like to hear more from us, the Long Box Crusade is in a lot of places. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and most podcatchers to include Spotify at www.longboxcrusade.com, Twitter X, Longbox Crusade, Facebook, Instagram, Longbox Crusade, Patreon. If you find Longbox Crusade there, you can join us on our Crusaders Club for $1 a month. We're grandfathered in. $1 a month will get you access to a whole bunch of stuff. We would love to have you. YouTube, please like and subscribe our content there. We have a do it live stream once a month, every second Sunday. I do a show called Come Out to Play, a live stream about the New Warriors every second Tuesday of the month at 8 p.m. Eastern. And we drop podcast content at least twice a week normally. So we give y'all a lot of stuff. Come check it out. And there's a voicemail. So you can leave us a voicemail about this show or any other, and we will play it. If you would like to call and leave us a comment, don't worry if you mess it up. You can always call back and leave a cleaner comment. We'll clean it up, make it sound real nice and pretty. We promise. 707-532-5269. That is 707-532-LBOX.
Pick up the phone.
Thank you. Don't call me babe. And you can email us at contact@longboxcrusade.com. Clinton, thank you so much for being on, man. We appreciate you coming in and pinch hitting for us. Let us know where you can be found out on the internet.
Hey, like I said, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. It's always a fun time with you guys. For the most part, people can find me usually down in the basement here at the LBC looking at some fan films on Fan Film Fridays. I also do another show called Coffee and Comics where I look at a comic. But more or less in the span of time to have a little coffee break. It's over on its own feed. Just look for Coffee and Comics.
Thank you for that, Glenn. Pat, where can you be found?
Well, Delvin, I'm glad you asked. You can find me on the Twitter at Christatos01. Where can you be found, Delvin?
Twitter X, DEE_RAY1977. Instagram at Delvin Ray. Thank you all very much for listening. I know I say it a lot, but we truly and sincerely appreciate you coming along and listening to this podcast and listening to us talk about the stuff that we love so much. See y'all next time. And remember, freedom is the right of all sentient beings till all are one.
Till all are one.
Till all are 3, 2, 1.
You got the touch. You got the power. Yeah!
All songs, song clips, and characters discussed are copyright of their respective copyright holders, and no infringement is intended, and it is for entertainment purposes only. We are just fans that like to share our love of comics.
You know what? Like, I still have to do it, even though, like, Maggie isn't here, right? In a world where things are not what they seem, it is a world of the Transformers, more than meets the eye. Okay, I feel better now. It's a show now. It's a show. All right.